Welcome to episode 118 of the Atomic Heart Supercast with your hosts, Andrew, David, and Jen. This week we read Daredevil by Brian Michael Bendis. And now, the cast begins. Okay, everybody, welcome to another horn-headed episode, why not, of the Atomic Power Supercast. My name is Andy, and I'm hanging out with David.
Hey.
Jen.
Hey.
And this week, we read Daredevil from... No, it's not from 1998. When is it from?
Yes, it's from 1998.
98? By Brian Michael Bendis. And it was issues 16 to 19, which, as we talked about last time, there's like two mega collections that have like 50 issues included in them, but we just did like the first section of that. Just the first section with the fucked up little boy. Because apparently we like to torture our own happiness. Anyway, yeah, that's what we read. So what did you guys think of it?
Actually, Andy, can I ask you a question?
Yes.
When you put this on the list, did you screen this comic or did you just pick those numbers?
I did a list. For every arc, what I do is I go and find the best of whatever we're doing. And since this one we were doing the best of Brian Michael Bendis, I heard everybody say, oh, well, this run on Daredevil was really, really great. But in all the collections, 16 to 19 are included. And then there's like five or six issues that are skipped. And then there's like 25 in a row that apparently have one large story. Mm-hmm. So it's like either we read these four issues or we read 25 issues. And I picked the smaller one because I'm lazy.
Yeah, no, that's fine. That's fine.
Just as a... beginning, like I read these, and then since I had the trade right there, I read the rest of them. They do not take up too much of your time, and especially like I think it's 26 through 31, really good. Just gonna put that out there. So definitely worth reading, and different tone than the issues we read here.
Is it better than this?
Yes.
Aww.
I did not dislike this, but I really loved the middle story. It was about Kingpin, and it was really well done. Just going to say that. So, worth continuing. Anyway.
Yeah. Well, this one's really weird. I think the art for this one was Alex Maleev. I'll have to double check that.
No, it's David Mack. David Mack.
Okay. No, Maleev is the later
David
stuff.
Mack with the M.
Mack. M-A-C-K. Like the truck.
Yes, he's a Mack truck.
So I mean, before we can talk about anything else with this comic, I think we should talk about the art, because it's sort of it's the most blatant thing when you pick this up and open to a page. Like, I know we picked this because it's supposed to be like a Bendis story, and it is, but man, this art is special.
It's beautiful, actually. Well, some of it's disturbing. Some of it's really just well colored.
Yes, that's a good way to put it.
did you care for it?
You know, this is the problem I always have when we get to comics with stylistic art, is you can't tell the story. Like, okay, issue 16, right? It opens with the all too classic, like, late 80s cartoony sort of comic book art. And then it transitions into the watercolor that we get for the rest of these four issues. And you can't have told this story with that art, with the art that's in the beginning of issue 16. You can't. It would not.
Yeah, certainly not.
There's no way. The tone doesn't fit. It doesn't work. It doesn't match. So, I mean, you can't have standard comic book art for a story like this, but at the same time, it's a barrier to read. It throws the reader off in a way that I'm not used to coming out of comic book.
Right. So, like, my issue... I thought the art was really good and well done. But I think this is I have the same complaint that I had when we read Arkham Asylum, where I think Dave McKean did the art.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, although the art is really good, it's not like comic booky enough for me. I also agree with what you said, Andy, that normal, like, typical comic book art, I mean, the first couple pages of issue 16 remind me of, like, kind of like Jim Lee art almost, you know, like where the characters have insane amounts of muscle definition.
Yes.
Which isn't a bad, I'm not, that's not a complaint or anything. But my problem with this art in particular, and this is not the same as I had with Arkham Asylum, is that there's so much going on in, like, the background or in, like, kind of where the gutters would be. It's hard to determine if you should pay attention to it. And I think the answer is, at least from, this is me guessing, is probably yes, you should be paying attention to it, because why else would the artist take the time to put it there?
Yeah, well, I don't want to call it the gutters, because it's outside of where even the gutters would be, more or less on the edges of the page. I kind of think of it more as being marginalia. I don't know if that's a real word or not.
It is.
But there's so much extra there. There's so much just, that just kind of frays out of the frame. And you're right, David. There's a lot of it that's out there that's not necessary at all. It's just extraneous, like, okay, great, there's these words that are written along the side that are just, like, you telling me what I can already get from the art and from the scene, like, how Ben Urich is feeling. Like, I get that. It's cool. You don't have to say, like, you don't have to write, like, loneliness along the side of it. But at the same time, after you've convinced yourself that it's okay not to look at it because it's redundant like that, there's also this whole side narrative that's going on with this guy and Elektra and his own feelings about Daredevil. And his own interactions with this hero that he's not quite sure is positive for his life. Like, those interactions are all in that margin, too. So it's like, if you don't read that, then I think it's issue 19 where you just get a full-page frame of Elektra. And it's like, okay, what the fuck is she doing here? Like, if you haven't been paying attention to the marginalia, then it's just gone. That scene doesn't mean anything for you. It's just, okay, whatever, there's a thing that happened with them, too. Okay, great.
Well, there's another scene too that's similar to that where it's like a big shot of Echo, who's another female ninja type character who's deaf. It's like it's in issue 17, like a few pages in,
mm-hmm.
And there's no real reason for her to be there. I don't even remember if she's mentioned in the storyline at all.
I don't think so.
But she's brought up because she's deaf, and so it like relates to Daredevil in that they have a similar
power set, if you want to call it that.
Yeah, and like so it has this picture of Echo and some text, like some little thought bubbles where Ben is thinking about what it must be like to be Daredevil, right? And then if you read in the margins, it talks about there's these little pictograms. Like, there's an ear, and it says, this doesn't work. And then there's a picture of a mouth where it says, read lips. And then study with this, and it's a picture of an eye. Windows to the world, to my soul. Right? But the only way you would know that is if you know who Echo is, because and why she matters.
Because yeah, I was it could be confused.
It could be Elektra to anyone, or it's just some lady.
I thought in the frame it was Elektra, and on the side it was talking about Daredevil.
No, so the things around the framed picture, the woman in the picture is Echo.
Ah.
And then all the things around it are about Echo, because she's deaf. The handprint thing, you see how it says the handprint at the top? That's because she was a member of the Hand.
Yeah.
And on her costume she has a handprint, a white handprint. But you would not know that unless you had been reading Daredevil before.
Yeah, and I guess... I don't know, maybe if I was a more intelligent reader, I'd be able to put together that those things in the margins were about this woman, but I don't know, I didn't make that connection.
Nope. I mean, I read everything in the margin, and I was kind of like, I have no idea who this is, so there was not enough context, like, even there, just to explain what's going on or why it was there.
Now, I think it's really cool, like, the way they presented all this information about Echo. But unless you know who she is, it doesn't mean anything necessarily. So especially in the context of a Daredevil comic, because it says this doesn't work, and it's about a guy who has super senses except for his sight. Of course, his ears would work. You know, his hearing would be okay.
So did you think that this art was more apt or more useful in this comic, or more fitting in this comic than David McKean's art was for Arkham Asylum?
Mm-hmm.
See, because I go back and forth. Arkham Asylum, I did not like the art. I mean, the art was actually not bad. There were parts that I really didn't like, but if I recall, the lettering of Arkham Asylum is what drove me crazy.
Well, it was really hard to follow in Arkham Asylum because there was extraneous text, like like there is here,
like everywhere.
See, but the in this comic we have clear word and thought bubbles, so you can say, okay, this is what Ben Urich is thinking.
Yeah.
See, I think that makes it not work though, because, like, if they just left it for the catatonic child, that would make a lot more sense. So you're kind of seeing this chaos and dissonance inside his mind. And, you know, all he has are these broken pictures that it takes Ben, like, a bunch of issues to figure out, hey, he's drawn a comic describing a series of events. So the thing is, for Ben, we know that he's thinking clearly. We understand what he's thinking. It's all salient to us. And these pictures depict way more emotional turmoil in him than we're getting from the text or from the context. So it actually clashes with, like, how Bendis is portraying his character.
Yeah, see, because I don't think that the watercolor style in this comic is for the kid. I think it's for Ben. I think we get the kid's perspective in the first couple issues. He wants to see the entire world as a comic book.
Yeah, and I think the parts, the parts that represent, to me, what the child is thinking is the crayon parts.
Yeah.
You know, because it's like a childish portrayal, right?
Yes.
But you're right, I agree with you, though. All the watercolors and the penciled, like the sketched parts are definitely Ben's experience.
Because I think I get the sense that that's how he likes to see the world. He likes to see it as being this wonderful thing full of rich art, kind of a feeling. I don't know, maybe because he's a writer and that's what we've been told to think, perhaps, by Bendis. But I don't know. I like the art in this a lot, but I think Arkham Asylum's fit Arkham Asylum better than this fits this. Because Arkham Asylum, it's crazy. There's crap everywhere. You know, this area is dark. What the fuck is going on? What the hell? But you're in a madhouse. Like, it's okay. It's not supposed to make sense. If it makes complete sense to you, you might be a little bit crazy. You know? Like, that all fits great. And while I really did like the art in this, and I love the use of watercolor in a comic book, I think watercolor is a freaking great medium for comics that's not utilized at all. Mostly because it takes forever. If you want to draw it with any kind of accuracy. But there's too many times, I think, in this where it sort of breaks its own style. Or, well, I guess it couldn't break its own style because it's defining a style as it's being drawn. But it's more... It just doesn't... There are so many panels where I go, wait, why is his face shaped like that now? I don't understand. Like, he has a long face, but he's not sad. Like, there's no connection between the dude's face and his thoughts sometimes. And the different distortions that the comic portrays versus what's actually going on. It doesn't always line up the way I would want it to. Which might be the point. I don't know.
I don't know. It just feels like he's supposed to be, like, not together or having some sort of great crisis. Like, I think we're supposed to see Ben as being kind of really pitiful or lacking faculty, but he doesn't he at one point admit he was abused as well?
Yes, yeah. I think so.
And I think it's supposed to reflect kind of that state of mind, but it doesn't come across like that.
So anyway, we've also seen Arkham Asylum is not the only example that we can draw upon. We've also seen this kind of watercolory art with Face Off Black Widow. I can't even remember the real name of the story. But it's the Yelena Belova and Natasha Belova and Romanova.
She has, like, different spy names, so, you know.
Yeah. But we got it in there, too. In that one, it felt so much... I don't know.
Well, I think in that comic, it was very consistent. The art style was consistent throughout.
And when it broke its own internal consistency, it was very, very subtle. It was like with color or with a certain thing over here. It wasn't like this page is going to be radically different than the other ones. Even though it's all still watercolory.
And part of the thing that was hard with this is like there's a few different styles used in here, right? Sometimes there's the actual characters are are painted with watercolors, but then sometimes it's a watercolor field with the character drawn in like sketch style.
Yeah.
And sometimes that's used to represent, the sketch style is used to represent what's happening in Ben Urich's mind. Like there's a part where he's thinking about the Kingpin trial, and then his mind goes to the time where when he's stabbed by Elektra, and there's like him lying on the ground and the Psi next to him and he's bleeding, and that's sketched out. And then when it goes back to him in the present, it's back to a watercolor portrait of Ben. But then there's other times where there's like Ben is like he's thinking and he's got his hand up to his like his forehead and he's kind of got furrowed brow and it's watercolored, and then the next shot is him remembering being stabbed and it's watercolor again, and then it goes back to the it's the first page of 18. And it alternates back and forth, except there's one part where it's like him sitting at his desk and it's sketched, and it's like, okay. So it's hard to say, do certain styles represent certain things? I mean, I think the answer to that is yes, because we know that the crayon drawings represent what Timmy's thinking or his memory about the event with Leapfrog and Daredevil. But the art with Urich is like all over the place. Is that a bad thing? I'm not sure if it is or if it isn't, because like we all seem to agree that the actual art is beautiful.
Yeah.
But does this jumping of styles contract or add to the storyline? I don't know.
I would make an argument that maybe it doesn't, because like this is what we would see in an illustrated piece of writing, not necessarily a comic. A comic implies some sort of harmony between art and text, but it's not appearing here.
Yeah, we're losing consistency frame to frame, and the scene where Daredevil's standing on the ledge, right, and talking, like, that's a beautiful piece of art. He's drawn really well. The watercolor works. It's all awesome. And you get a sense that this is what the world feels like. Great. Except, like, it doesn't hold up as sequential art, in that it doesn't have the consistency in its transitions the way that you pointed out, David. And it's beautiful art. It's amazingly pretty, but... I don't know.
Like if we go way, way back into the beginning of very early in when we started doing the podcast, if you think about Promethea, that had non-sequential art. The style was consistent, but the transition from her in her non-Promethea form to when she goes to like the land where, or the way Promethea perceives the world, it's the same style, but the visuals are completely different. We go from this urban cityscape to this like bucolic fantastic realm, you know.
Yeah,
but here it's always the same settings. It's New York, it's either in this office or the courtroom where he's thinking about Kingpin's trial, or the rooftop and stuff, and the transitions, like you said, don't lend themselves to a sequential storytelling medium like comics. So I think that it can work, but here it doesn't necessarily work, at least for me it doesn't work. And it sounds like it doesn't work for you either.
It's not that it doesn't, but I'm not going to say that it won't work for me, but it doesn't work for me. I'm still on the fence. There's sometimes when I love it, and there's sometimes when I go, why is his face that way? I don't know.
As art of it, in and of itself, I definitely love it.
All right. So let's move on to some of the story elements then. So I think basically the moral of this story is that this kid is fucked. Like, in the head.
Definitely.
I mean...
Well, he experienced a traumatic event, right?
Yeah.
I'm saying that's why.
Yeah.
Not confirming. You know, through this whole story, I thought maybe something bad happened to this kid. And that's why he's messed up and in the hospital. Can you confirm that for me, Andy? Yes, he did. Yes. He definitely experienced a traumatic event, and that is why he's messed up. But it has a happy ending, so I wouldn't say he's fucked forever.
Is it really happy? He killed his own father. I mean...
Right, but I think Daredevil's there to say it's going to be okay.
He doesn't like his father. Clearly, he doesn't like his father.
Yeah, but regardless of whether or not you like the man, it's traumatic. And then... Considering the fact that you got to bring the hero worship into it too. Like, this kid worshipped these heroes. Like, aside from the comics and the movies and this and that, the toys, like, and then his dad was a villain.
Well, he killed his dad to save Daredevil.
Yeah. It's fucked up.
He chose Daredevil over his own father. Yeah. He was a horrible person.
Horrible person and a horrible father and a villain and all these other bad things. Like, you can't say that's part of this. One of the turns that I really did like about the story, actually, is that for this kid, there's no right move there. There's none. That moment is going to be traumatic for that kid no matter what. You know? And so, I mean, you can say he made the right decision because his father was a bad guy, his father was a villain, this, that, the other thing, and Daredevil's great, but at the end of the day, it's his dad. And he picks this total stranger who he knows nothing about outside of fucking comic books and, like, television, picks this random stranger over his own father. Like, you flip it the other way. It's still horrible. Because you get the fact that he worships these heroes on top of it, and it's like, he can't turn that down, and he can't turn that, like, it doesn't matter. The moment he's in that moment, it's traumatic.
Well, I mean, the other option is he watches his dad maybe kill Daredevil.
Yeah.
So either way, it's going to be a horrible situation for him. You know, he has, in this, I mean, maybe Daredevil is just horribly injured. Not that that's much better, right?
Yeah.
And so this, like Andy said, in this situation, the kid's, like, totally fucked. Unfortunately.
Well, what about you, Jen? What did you think about that scene on the rooftop?
I don't know. I feel like the resolution was really not... It made it feel like, oh, superheroes can cure everything, because Daredevil, like, gives the kid a hug and he is apparently no longer catatonic. The thing is, like, that's going to be a lot of complex emotion, choosing the superhero that you worship over your father, who, aside from the fact that he's a dick, he's still your dad, and, like, the fact that you killed a man, father or not, and you're a kid, like, it's such a complex issue, and I feel like it gets distilled down because we're seeing it from Ben's point of view. And at the same time, Ben comes off as a kind of, like, not an unreliable, but a very weak-minded narrator. So we don't really have a good idea of, I think, how anything turns out. And it comes off as a little light and fluffy for such a heavy topic.
Well, yeah. I think maybe part of the issue, especially with Ben as a narrator, is he's a reporter, right? And I think he even says it, that his role as a reporter is just to relay information, not necessarily to tell a story. So he only tells it from his perspective with the evidence he has available. He tries to be unbiased, but he can't get inside Timmy's head, right? Mm-hmm. So he's not a good, like,
he can't convey the story. Yeah. Yes, omniscient. That's, yes, perfect. I don't know why I talked over you there when you had it exactly right.
That's okay. and then another thing with Timmy, right, is he, you know, it's a traumatic experience because he's killed someone and this someone just happens to be his father. But who's to say that he wouldn't do the same thing for somebody that wasn't Daredevil? Maybe he just has a heroic streak, or he just wanted to do the right thing by helping a person in a bad situation. You know, his father is clearly the evil person here, right? Mm-hmm. He's gonna kill Daredevil. He's beating him with a pipe, you know, and he doesn't seem like he's gonna stop doing that. So maybe Timmy didn't necessarily see it as he's like, oh man, my dad's beating up a superhero. Maybe it's like, my dad's beating up, he's gonna kill another person, and I don't want this other person to be killed, so I'm gonna try to stop my dad, and his only option is this severed power line. And, you know, we don't know if it's the electricity that kills Leapfrog, or maybe it's the fall from the building into the garbage truck.
Well, that'll do it.
So, I mean, you know, maybe it wasn't Timmy's intention to kill his father, just to incapacitate his father.
Yeah. I don't. I thought I really liked the resolution. I'm completely not in agreement with Jen, but I like it because I think the one thing that Timmy didn't get during the encounter was he didn't get any kind of resolution of the event, right? I mean, you got to figure he shocks his father, and Daredevil doesn't remember the kid at first. Like when Ben and Daredevil are talking, Daredevil doesn't remember the kid. And then slowly as he's telling the story again, he remembers the kid. He's like, oh yeah, there's the kid. And then Ben tells him that was Leapfrog's son. And then Ben goes, oh fuck. Like, then he gets it. Like, so there was no moment, no anything to tell Timmy that the decision that he made was okay. That what he did had any sense of right to it. I mean, up until that resolution with Daredevil, all you get is that this kid killed his fucking dad. He went catatonic, and now he's in the hospital that probably feels a little bit like a prison, and fuck, his life sucks. Like, shock your dad, and then go to hospital. Like, that's it. But that moment with Daredevil is like, dude, bro, I'm so sorry. I mean, not to, like, undermine the moment, but that's pretty much what it is. Is he goes, it's okay, you did the right thing, you saved my life, and I can actively appreciate you for doing that for me now, especially more knowing who you are and who he was. And even though none of those words go back and forth, that moment sort of portrays that feeling of resolution between the two characters, and I really, really like that. So, ha.
Yeah, I agree with Andy. I think that, you know, this closes the story for us, but it provides resolution for Timmy, and maybe, like Andy said, it lets him know that he did, that things turned out okay, the good guys won, you know. It's, you know, it is complicated for, I mean, Jen, you're right, there are complicated emotions, and it's hard to deal with something like this, especially for an adult, but as a kid, maybe, because he is a child and he has trouble, it's harder for him to process this kind of thing. He simplifies it to himself in his own mind that, you know, the good guys win in the end, even though it's his dad, you know. So I'm not a psychologist, so. Andy?
Well, I mean, regardless, like, this doesn't solve things for the kid. I mean,
no.
Jen makes a point where she says at the end, you know, oh, hey, a hug from Daredevil, and suddenly he's not catatonic anymore. Like, okay, that straight up is, like, miraculous, but aside from that, this kid's gonna have years and years of therapy after this moment, and it doesn't fix everything. It doesn't fix everything for the kid, because his father's still dead. His mother's still selfish. Like, his family dynamic is still fucked, and he's still only all of, what, 12? Like, this kid's...
younger than that.
Yeah, not even 12. This kid's just boned. Like, this moment's wonderful, and this is resolution for us in our story, and this is resolution for Ben, but this kid, it doesn't fix everything for him. It doesn't really fix anything for him. It just makes it so that it breaks the barrier so that he can accept treatment, because he can understand why he's feeling the way he's feeling. He can get past that block, but other than that, I mean, there's still... kid killed his father.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no resolution that's going to happen with that in 4 issues. There's just not.
No. I don't know. Like, I think it left me with a sour taste about Ben, but I did like how Daredevil handled it, and I liked this really slow introduction to the character through the lens of another, because, I don't know, it's, like, interesting. It's he's the title character, but we don't really see much of him, and then, you know, what we do see in him is the embodiment of, like, an act of caring, which is what a superhero is supposed to be. Mm. So that was cool.
Yeah, that's a perfect way to phrase it. So what do we think of Ben as a character? Did you guys like him? Did you find him annoying?
In this comic, he's kind of mopey.
Yeah.
I've read him in other comics too, though, so maybe I think you guys will probably give a better perspective in the context of this story, because I know how he can be in other things. Like, with every major Marvel event, like Fear Itself and Civil War and Secret Invasion and Siege, they always have a mini called Frontline, and it's about Ben telling the story, like, you know, it's Ben's story as he interacts with the heroes.
Okay, because that was going to be a follow-up question, is whether or not this character was invented here or was already part of the Marvel Universe.
I don't know if he's invented here, but in the last, like, since I've started collecting comics in earnest, I see him a lot, because I, for a long time, I was getting, if, like, there was an event for Marvel, I would get all of the comics related to that, and so I would get Frontline, and then I would read about Ben. Like, in Secret Invasion, he does some kind of heroic stuff, because he tries to protect people and things like that. Yes. But in, I mean, here, he's
here,
doing
I get
his reporter thing.
But that's the problem, is he's not even doing his reporter thing. His reporter thing is to go cover the trial of Kingpin. And when he mocks it and says, that's stupid, everybody knows it's Kingpin, Kingpin always wins, you all are being stupid, this is so predictable. And then when he's not there, when he's off fucking around with this other story he's not supposed to be fucking around with, which, not to demean the plight the kid goes through, but when he's off fucking around, motherfucking Kingpin gets shot in court. Like, dude, you suck at your job. You deserve to get chewed up by J. Jonah Jameson for the 68th time this week.
You know, later in the trade, Ben does this really selfless, heroic thing, and it's just such a huge difference that, I don't know, like, I feel like the art especially is meant to make us see Ben as kind of a sad dude here. Not just, like, emotionally sad, but we're supposed to pity him a little, I think. Like, we're supposed to feel sad for him, too. And I don't feel like that fit with the other iterations of him that I've seen.
You know, you're very right. I get a lot of sense of how Ben feels, or his mood, his character, from the art in this. I didn't even consider that.
He kind of reminds me of, like, now people will probably disagree with me on this, but he reminds me of Commissioner Gordon.
Yeah.
Where he's a normal guy who has this job that puts him in the line, or forces him to interact with superheroes. So he does his best, and no matter what he does, he can't be at the superheroes, like, level. He can't be on that pedestal with them. Not saying that that's what he wants to do, but all his efforts are overshadowed by the heroes.
Mm-hmm.
And he strives to, they both strive to do a really good job. Like, Commissioner Gordon's a really good police officer. Ben's probably a really good newspaper reporter. I mean, he fucks around like this, and he keeps his job at the Bugle, so he must have some really,
I mean, this story's good
qualities. Yeah, and so I feel like that they're very similar characters in that way, where they're really good at their job, but because of their interaction with mass vigilantes and superheroes, they're overshadowed, and maybe unconsciously they feel a little bit marginalized. And in Jim Gordon's case, it's not just subconscious. There's a lot of times when he is, like, mad at Batman for messing up the police. You know, let the police do their job. Especially, yeah. I've been reading No Man's Land, and Batman disappears after the earthquake, and the city goes to hell. And Gordon's like, fuck Batman, I don't want him around here anymore. He lost his chance, and he abandoned us. And then when Batman does return, he's fucking pissed off at him.
Yeah.
People try to set up meetings with the two of them, and Gordon refuses to see Batman, because Batman abandoned him, and they were able to do their job with Batman. They were retaking parts of the city and stuff, and Batman wasn't around, and the cops were doing it cop way, you know? I don't know if Ben would get mad at Spider-Man or Daredevil in the same way, but I feel like there's a lot of similarities between the two characters.
No, I agree with that 100%. Like, that's a really, I didn't see that connection, but like now that you've said it, it totally makes sense.
So I'm still trying to grapple with the Ben not being a melancholy dude. And I think that if this character that I have in my mind is being Ben Urich is not the way that he normally is, then I think that that is then the big problem with the art in this, because then it did the character a disservice.
Well, I think that he is a melancholy guy a lot, but I feel like this is an extreme. He kind of is deep down, and he's like in a hole in this one. And the times when he's heroic is kind of, it's a little bit out of his normal character, but he's capable of doing good, great things, you know? He has it in him, but that's not his normal person, his normal personality. Like, Daredevil's saving dudes every day. That's like, that is Daredevil, but I know we mentioned this in the notes, like, about Shadowland. That's like, that's the bad version of Daredevil, like, when he's in his dark place. So maybe this has been in, like, a dark place, right? He keeps remembering the Elektra part where he gets, you know, I don't know what that refers to exactly, but obviously he got stabbed by a ninja, so maybe he's, because of that, he's just in a bad place.
Well, you know, because when I separate the art from the actions, right, if I just think about the things that Ben has done during these four issues, then I can see the Jim Gordon parallel. Because, I mean, yeah, he blows off his job and all these other things, but it's because he met this kid, and this kid is traumatized, and this kid has a problem, and he has a problem that Ben might be able to fix. This kid has a problem with Daredevil, and Ben knows Daredevil. Ben knows Daredevil real well. Like, so he looks at this kid that's traumatic, and he even says, I think it's an issue 17 or 18, when he says, I could just forget. I could just forget I even met this kid. I could forget it had anything to do with Daredevil. If my friend met Murdoch, I could just forget and be gone and be back to my happy life. Like, he could just forget and go. But I think he does the right thing. He does a very heroic thing to stick it out with this kid and figure out what the hell is going on, what the fuck happened, and what he can do to help. Like, just actions of what Ben does. I can see the Commissioner Gordon parallel. But for some reason, up until we talked about it just recently, like just right now, my sense of Ben was not anywhere near that. And I think it's precisely because the art draws him so sad and the colors are so melancholy. And the way that the artist uses watercolor to bleed, it always droops down on the page. It pulls you down when you're reading it. And it just, I feel like if I got this sense of the character from the art, that now that I reevaluate the character's actions, it doesn't match up. It's not the way this guy is. It might be his mood, but that's certainly not what he is. It's not what he's acting like. I don't know. I gotta think about that a bit more. You know, because I think here, even though we talk about him as being a reporter and this and that, I think he does heroic stuff here too. It might be smaller scale. He's not like out saving the galaxy or whatever the fuck he does in other comics, but like, he does a good thing. He's a very heroic guy for this kid. He might have saved this kid's life.
I would agree, and I actually just want to like go off on a brief tangent about scale, because like, I kind of feel like this quest to help this little kid is what Daredevil's all about, in that, you know, you can go to the Avengers Mansion, and if you're just one person and the world doesn't need saving because, you know, we don't have some big invasion or catastrophe, Galactus isn't going to eat us all. Like, the Fantastic Four, the Avengers, the X-Men, they're kind of like, well, fuck you. Too bad. You can't get in.
Got, you know, shit to do.
Yeah, call the hotline and we'll get back to you in 18 months. But I feel like Daredevil, we see him, and, you know, he's willing to go out and meet this one child just to be like, hey, it's okay. And, you know, he's not really a headliner world-saving sort of guy, but he operates in this one neighborhood, and he seems more focused on, like, these individuals. And I think Ben's quest here to help this kid is a little reflective of who Daredevil is, in that he's not this big-time superhero, just like, you know, Ben is no Peter Parker. He doesn't make all the money at the newspaper. But he's doing something small that affects someone in a really big way. I don't know. Is that? I think you guys have probably read more Daredevil than I have. Does that sound kind of what he's about?
I don't know. I think since you finished the trade paperback, I'm pretty sure you've read more Daredevil than me.
Yeah. My experience with Daredevil is him appearing in New Avengers and reading Shadowland.
Yeah, mine is from 3 issues of Shadowland, after which I stopped reading Shadowland.
I toughed it out through the whole thing.
Did it get better?
It was pretty consistent.
Okay, that's a good way to phrase it.
Okay, because, I mean, through the rest of the trade, we see Daredevil, like, he gets embroiled in very personal things. So, like, issues 26 through 31, there's a thing with Kingpin, which is totally worth reading. And although I don't recall him just helping some random strangers, he does... It's really, like, small-focused. It's not world-saving. It's not superhero-y. And then the next set of issues after that, he takes on the trial of some random dude who was falsely accused, and it's like this very personal problem done as a personal favor to Luke Cage. So, I don't know. He seems more small-timey, but in a good way.
Yeah, I mean, so far as my understanding mostly comes from having heard about Daredevil and watching the movie with Ben Affleck,
which
I didn't think was actually that bad. That's just me.
I didn't care for it, but that's
true. I didn't think it was bad either.
It wasn't good, but compared to things like Fantastic Four, Rise of the Silver Surfer, and it's not bad. It's really not that bad.
Fuck that stupid movie.
I mean, there are a lot of worse Marvel property movies out there than Daredevil was. But I think, because he's concerned with his neighborhood, right? And maybe a bigger player comes and starts to fuck around in his neighborhood, like Kingpin does in the movie at least, and then it becomes Daredevil's concern. But so far as I know, if you don't go into his neighborhood, he doesn't really give that much of a shit. Like, it's whatever. Leave Manhattan to Peter Parker. Leave the galaxy to Thor and Iron Man. But just Hell's Kitchen. I got that. I can handle this area. This area is mine. I got this. Whatever fuck else you want to do, go do it. I got this.
There's actually like an example of that where there's these crime bosses coming around and a new one comes to town and he's like, yeah, I'm going to set up in Hell's Kitchen. Why haven't you guys? And it's clear everywhere in the surrounding area, there's mafia activity. But in Hell's Kitchen, no one can set up shop because Daredevil puts a stop to it. So, I mean, I guess Peter Parker isn't too big on quashing the mafia. But
or maybe it's just better grassroots crime fighting.
Maybe.
Like maybe if Peter Parker weren't on, like, 5 different Avengers teams and sometimes the Fantastic Four and occasionally X-Men, I think, once or twice he was, I don't know. If he were just in his one fucking neighborhood and not off dicking around everywhere, maybe that neighborhood would be clean. Maybe everybody's else's problem is that they leave their neighborhood.
I don't know. Batman seems to do all right with the whole city.
Well, he's motherfucking Batman.
Yeah, come on, you can't compare Daredevil to Batman. They're like the same, except Batman's richer and can see.
Gotta bring disabilities into this, huh, Andy?
I'm sorry, it's a whole driving point of the character.
You mean he's defined by his disability? That's pretty harsh, Andy.
His superpower is that he's disabled.
He's super blind.
He's super blind. Okay, see, that's worse than anything I've said so far. So, what do you guys think of this? How does this feel as a Bendis comic, I want to say? Since we've read 2 so far, I feel like we're experts to talk about Bendis comics.
it's definitely a Bendis comic. A lot of words were said.
You know, but it wasn't as much as the Alias was. I don't know. I get that there's Bendis likes to write a lot.
Yeah, and it's not. I'm poking fun. I think that there are creators who write a lot and don't say much, and I think that Bendis, although he's a pretty prolific writer, he tells a good story most of the time.
Yeah, I mean, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, like, I think his wordiness comes out especially just because when he pauses, you know it's important and you're, like, paying attention. And then he starts talking again, and you're like, oh, lots of stuff. I mean, like, it's just his pauses are so strong and yes. so dramatic that when he starts writing, it tones it down a little.
Well, I mean, yeah. I feel like maybe we didn't do Bendis justice in the three things that we've picked. This wasn't another gritty detective story, but it was kind of another gritty detective story.
Yeah.
Substitute detective with reporter, and it pretty much was.
I think probably what happened when we picked these stories, we were like...
It was a gritty social worker story.
It's like, you know, Bendis isn't... He's the Avengers guy, right? He was for a really long time at Marvel. I remember reading some article towards... Because his run on Avengers just ended, and he wrote, like, 200-some-odd Avengers comics.
Insane.
And, you know, we didn't read any of the Avengers stuff, and we probably should have.
We'll have to write that wrong when we do an Avengers.
That's what he's known for, right? And so this, I think, shows another side of Bendis. Like, I've read a lot of his Avengers stuff, and so I know he can do superheroes really well. And so this, you know, even though I didn't absolutely love all these stories, I think he's pretty good. You know, he's a good writer, and he's a very creative person. I think he's a good. I said good like 700 times just there.
Well, I think it's a matter of perspective, right? When you write 200 some odd issues of Avengers comics, you're writing 200 issues of Star Spangled comics, right? Just the stock, awesome guy, strong dude, beating up scientist, mad guy, right? It's a lot of stock things, but in these three things that we've read, we've seen him take that perspective and turn it on its head. We've seen him lift the rock and show what else is going on in this Marvel universe. And I think that these stories wouldn't have been as good, and they wouldn't have been as satisfying to read if he hadn't also been doing that Avengers thing. I think that Bendis is a guy probably with a unique perspective to write this sort of comic. And I say this sort of comic because all three tended to fit in the same vein. And so it's obviously something that's on his mind, right? I imagine after writing 200 issues of Marvel, just Avengers comics, you kind of want to write the other part of the world comics. And when he writes those, they're all kind of the same maybe, but it's easy to tell why, I think. All right.
Well said, Andy.
So, yeah, do you guys have anything else you want to add? Anything else we want to talk about?
No, I think that's...
No.
I don't have anything else.
All right. Well, let's rate this one. David, you go first.
All right. All right. I will give this a 3.5. I enjoyed this story. I thought it was really well written. And the art was beautiful art. But I don't think it was the best art to go with this story. But that's the same complaint I had about Dave McKean and Arkham Asylum. I was a little bit disappointed, and this isn't the comic's fault. I was looking forward to reading about Daredevil, and Daredevil's not in it that much.
Yeah.
But like Jen said, it was a really cool way to learn about the character. So, from that perspective, it was interesting. But I think, as an overall package, it's a good story. I don't know if it's the best introduction to Daredevil for everyone. But it's a good story, and the art on its own is really, really good. So, I think 3.5 is good. I think if you are interested in reading Bendis' Daredevil, this is probably a good place to start. If you want to be Daredevil in general, maybe this isn't the best place. But you should definitely get to this at some point, because it's a good story. So 3.5.
All right, I'll go next. I'm also going to give it a 3.5 for different reasons. I thought the art was really pretty, and it was like I would get a print from this guy and put it on my wall, definitely. But I just got that bad, shitty feeling that the actions of Ben Urich didn't match up with the art. And maybe that's because we sat here and deconstructed it, and I had to take them apart and look at them both separately to realize that it didn't. And maybe we're looking at it the wrong way, and maybe I'm supposed to look at the combination and say, oh, look, he might be in a melancholy mood, whatever, but he's still being a good dude. But at some point, the art and the mood of the art has to match up with the character and the character's actions. The style has to match what I'm seeing on the page. And for that, as beautiful as this art is, I don't know that it was a great fit for this story for what Ben does. I mean, Ben probably is in a shitty mood, because even if he's doing a good thing and writing the story about this kid, it's going to fucking bring you down to write about this kid. I get that, but just sitting here evaluating it, it doesn't feel like it fits after the fact. That said, I also want to, like, that's why I want to give it a 3 or 2.5, but I want to give it a 4 because I'll tell you, that ending with Daredevil hugging that boy, man, that was fucking beautiful. That was good story writing. I mean, that was I jokingly said it was like, it's okay, bro, come here, bro, it's going to be cool. Like, I jokingly said it that way, but that moment is, I got all kinds of great resolution from that moment. That felt good to read that page. Felt good for Ben, it felt good for the boy, it felt good for Daredevil, and it felt good because it was right. Also, that it wasn't the instant cure. It wasn't, Daredevil's here, I'm going to give you a hug. You don't need 8 years of therapy. Like, it didn't feel like that. It just felt like the right moment for this scale of comic. And it was perfectly balanced, I think, on Bendis' part. And the art really played in there, too. The art, those were the best pages of this comic. So, yeah, considering the two ends of that spectrum, a 3.5. What about you, Jen?
I would say 3.5 for just the story that we're reading right now. I think the art was beautiful, and the artist, like, had such attention to detail with the emotions he put in. The marginalia, I didn't read all of it, but the parts that attracted my attention were interesting and they added depth. Unfortunately, I feel like they were adding depth to the wrong character. And I feel like the art's focus was on the wrong guy. I don't know. Like, maybe if it was more in focus, or focusing on Ben's perception of what he thinks the child is going through. But it just seemed like Ben's brain was really messed up. And we're seeing some, like, heavy PTSD from getting stabbed by Elektra. And it's kind of like, I don't know. I know it's an issue of violence and abuse, but I'm not sure that the Elektra stabbing necessarily ties into that. And of course, psychologically, it doesn't have to for you to, like, you know, trigger and freak out. But for readers in a built narrative, maybe it should. On the other hand, if I was going to rate the entire trade, I'm going to give that trade a 4.5 because, like, the lead-in was interesting, and you're kind of like, what's going on? These are weird issues. And then you get to this next set, and it's like, I devoured these issues. I just read them and enjoyed them so thoroughly. I'm not going to spoil anything that happens, because it's a lovely little mystery, suspense, thriller thing that unfolds. And then the end dragged. But, I mean, the trade is, I think it deserves a high rating. Maybe you guys, if we were rating that,
I picked the wrong ones. No.
I think, but this was a great lead-in. It, like, it's interesting and different. And then what's really cool is you see this crazy art style that doesn't appear in comics. You flip the page and suddenly we're back to normal, and you're like, what just happened? And it's a really interesting lead-in, and I liked this story despite some of the issues I had with it. So 3.5 for issues, 16 through 19?
Yup. All right, wow, unanimous score. It's been a while, right? Or was it last time? I don't know, I forget.
A couple times ago, something like that.
Yeah. So, okay, that ends up our Brian Michael Bendis arc. And you know, I figured since it's like the end of January, getting into February, it's probably okay if we did a best of 2012 series, because I think 2012, a lot of people complained about the state of comics, especially relating to DC Comics and the New 52, and so much of what I remember reading about comics industry was just all about it being a downward trend. and like comics were getting shittier, this, that, and it was all bad. So I'm like, I want to take a month. I want to do 4 episodes and talk about the best stuff to come from 2012. And you know, I had actually a hard time winning this list down to 4. There were a lot of different sources saying a lot of different best 10 comics of 2012. So what we're going to do is next episode, we're going to read Saga Volume 1, written by Brian K. Vaughan with art from the Fiona Staples. This is the same guy that wrote Why the Last Man, which was fucking amazing. Have either of you guys read that?
I haven't read Why the Last Man, but I have read Saga.
Oh man, Why the Last Man is so fucking good. Yeah, read that if you can. And then after that, we're going to read Batman Volume 1, Court of Owls.
Yeah,
written by Scott Snyder with art by Greg Capullo, and that's the reaction that I get whenever I bring this comic up is hell yeah, which is so weird because my only knowledge of this story outside of getting that reaction from people is I remember I was at Comic-Con last year, and they did this Court of Owls thing and they handed out the masks to people, and I was like, oh great, another stupid New 52 thing, and I was all frumpy about it. And now I'm like, fuck, I should have picked one up. Apparently it was awesome.
Yeah, Andy, where's my Court of Owls mask?
God, I'm sorry. I would have gotten you one if I'd have known it was actually a good comic. And after that, we're going to read Hawkeye Volume 1, which is titled My Life as a Weapon. This is Matt Fraction. He started writing Hawkeye because, God, if anybody can make Hawkeye seem interesting, it's got to be that guy, right? If Matt Fraction can't, then it's just give up on the character.
Poor Hawkeye.
Okay, look... There is a very short list of superheroes that make me groan more than Daredevil, and Hawkeye's on that list.
Oh, man, I didn't know Daredevil was groan-inducing.
Dude, Daredevil is like, man, super, super blind. That's all I can say.
Super blind.
That's what you said earlier. I'm quoting you here. And then we're going to wrap up the Best of 2012 arc with a graphic novel called Underwater Welder.
I don't know anything about this. All I know is that everyone says it's awesome.
Yeah, that's about all I got. And you know what I figured? It's been a while since we did a pure graphic novel. Like, this isn't a trade paperback. This isn't a collection from anything. This isn't the intro to a story. This is a contained story all in itself. So yeah, Underwater Welter, that's by Jeff Lemire. He did the story and the art for that graphic novel. But I'm excited. This is going to be a fun arc, and hopefully it's going to be a bunch of good comics, a lot of recent stuff, good and relevant.
All Sweet. Right.
So yeah, next week would be Saga, yeah. First 6 issues, if you got the singles, and if you want to get the trade, it's only like $10 on Amazon. That's the other good thing about reading current comics, I've noticed, or current, quote-unquote, current trade paperbacks, is that, like, they're fucking cheap. They're cheap nowadays. It's nice.
Because they're in print now.
Yeah.
That's what happens to old trades, is they get expensive because you can't find them.
They're out of print, or you have to buy an Ultimate collection. One of those two. So anyway, that'll be next week. Until then, you can get all the information for these episodes that are coming up on our website, which is www.atomicpoweredsupercast.com. You can also send us a suggestion for something that we should have put in our Best of 2012 or something we should do in an upcoming arc, and send us an email at
atomicpoweredsupercast@gmail.com.
But if you think email's for your grandfather and you want to do social media, we got that. We got facebook.com/APSupercast, twitter.com/APSupercast. We got both of those. And as always, please subscribe to us on
iTunes.
All right. Until next week, everybody. Goodbye.
Bye.